Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Pesachim, daf Ayin Dalet. We should be starting the new parak. We're behind. We're on Ayin Gimel. And let us try to make up some ground for today. We are in the middle of a discussion between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish on this topic of Torah B'Dvar Mitzvah. Torah B'Dvar Mitzvah comes up as a result of the last Mishnah of the sixth parak of Pesachim, where the Mishnah over there describes what happens when I shecht what I think is a carbon Pesach on Shabbos. The Shabbos turns out to be the 14th day of Nisan, and it turns out that it's not it wasn't a carbon Pesach. I forgot. It was another carbon. I thought it was a carbon Pesach, I forgot. So is that considered a shogeg? So that's a major machlokus between the Tanaim, between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Eliezer says that's a shogeg. Mm-hmm. In other words, you took an animal that wasn't a carbon Pesach, you had no permission to shecht it on Shabbos, and you shecht it on Shabbos, and that's shogeg. And like all shogegin, you're liable, you're on the hook. You have to bring a carbon chatzos to the Beit HaMikdash as a kapara, as an atonement for that which you did. You violated Shabbos. Okay, and not b'mezid, but b'shogeg. So it's still considered a violation. Rabbi Yeshua says no. Rabbi Yeshua introduces us to this concept of Torah B'Dvar Mitzvah. Torah B'Dvar Mitzvah is the idea that I'm trying to do a mitzvah, and so therefore the Torah, Kadosh Baruch Hu, gives me a little room. A little room to make mistakes, because I'm really trying to. I'm a good guy, and I'm trying to do the right thing. And granted, I made a mistake over here. I shechted a carbon on Shabbos that I had no right to shecht, but it was it's Pesach, and everyone else is shechting carbon Pesach, and therefore it's an excusable mistake. So that's the idea of Torah B'Dvar Mitzvah, is that it is a mistake, but it's excusable because you're trying to do the right thing. Okay, and basically what we've been doing since the Mishnah, right, and that included Ayin Aleph, and it included Ayin Beis, and now it's going to include Ayin Gimel as well. It's a big, big sugya. So what we're trying to do is give us some sort of parameter of Torah B'Dvar Mitzvah, meaning when is it excusable, when it's not excusable. So let's say, for example, back in the Mishnah, what do we see? Well, we saw that even according to the sheet of Rabbi Yoshua, who holds to this concept of Torah B'Dvar Mitzvah, but the animal has to look like a carbon Pesach. It has to actually, there has to be some reasonable explanation in terms of why I thought it was a carbon Pesach. So it has to be male, and it has to be a goat or a sheep, and it has to be within its first year. So in other words, it had to have looked like a carbon Pesach. Then we could say, Torah B'Dvar Mitzvah, you're going to be pater. But if it was a cow, and I took it on in the Beis HaMikdash, and I shechted l'shem Pesach, so Rav Yeshua says, you're not going to be, you don't get excuse, you don't get a note and say it's okay, he's trying to shecht the carbon Pesach. No, that's not Torah B'Dvar Mitzvah, that goes back to shogeg, and then you're going to be chayav karmel chatos. That's what we learned back in the Mishnah. Now it happens to have been that Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah says, no, even in that case, that's also considered Torah B'Dvar Mitzvah. In fact, Rabbi Meir says, even if there's only two things that you got to keep in mind, meaning, let's say, for example, I shechted an animal in the Beis HaMikdash on Shabbos, l'shem karban tamid. Okay? Now there's only two. One in the morning, one in the afternoon. And after the karban tamid was shechted, now we go ahead and we shecht another karban, and I shecht l'shem karban tamid. Reb Meir says, even in that case, it's Torah B'Dvar Mitzvah. So as we explained, Reb Meir not only takes the Reb Yoshua position of Torah B'Dvar Mitzvah, but he runs with it. In other words, he expands Torah B'Dvar Mitzvah anytime I'm trying to do a mitzvah, so I'm going to be potter. Okay, that is so far what we saw back in the Mishnah. Then, on Ayin Beis Amud Beis, so we saw a statement by Reish Lakish followed by a statement by Rabbi Yochanan. Now, the statement to Reish Lakish is that, look, there's a shpud, there's a spit of meat, and one had Basar Kodesh, and the other one had Nosar. And by accident, I picked up the Nosar, and I ate the Shputchel Nosar. So Reish Lakish says, under those circumstances, Torah B'Dvar Mitzvah. Meaning I'm trying to do a mitzvah, eating Kachem is a mitzvah. Happens to be that I picked up the Nosar, which generally is an Isser Kares to eat Nosar. Not generally, it is an Isser Kares to eat Nosar. But I was trying to do a mitzvah, and so Reish Lakish argues that's Torah B'Dvar Mitzvah. Okay, and then Reish Lakish responds to Reish Lakish, but doesn't actually say whether he agrees or disagrees with Reish Lakish, but he responds to Reish Lakish, and he says the following. On Ayin Beis Amud Beis, sorry, I'm just looking for the spot. We're not going to start from here, but Rav Yochanan says that, look, if a man has relations with his wife and she turns out to be a nida, so he's going to be chayev. meaning he should have asked her, are you a nida, are you not a nida? He didn't ask her, so therefore that's considered a shogeg. But if he has relations with his yavama, so Rav Yochanan says, so then he's going to be pater. Why? Because of Toa Bidvar Mitzvah, because he's trying to do a mitzvah. Now, how do you understand Rav Yochanan? What was he saying to Reish Lakish? I agree with you. I disagree with you. How did that exchange work? So the Gemara gave two approaches to understand that exchange. So one approach of the Gemara is Kol Shekein, meaning that I totally agree with Reish Lakish. Yeah, I'm on board. Meaning the idea that Kol Shekein Ba'ahi D'Mechayv D'Lo Asa Mitzvah. Look, in the case of his wife, so as we discussed yesterday, there is some mitzvah regarding his wife, but nevertheless, so and
She was pregnant, but it was not.
I'll get to that in just a moment. So the there's some mitzvah, but in the case of the nosar and the shpuchel shall bust and the shpuchel nosar, when he ends up being the nosar, he's not accomplishing any mitzvah whatsoever. So in other words, if a man has relations with his wife where there's some mitzvah, and he still says that's a shogeg, so going back to the case of the shpuchel nosar, there he's not accomplishing a mitzvah at all. Again, granted, he's trying to do a mitzvah, but he's not accomplishing anything by eating the nosar, so therefore he's going to be chayv. So the first way to understand Rav Yochanan is that he's arguing with Reish Lakish. And the second way to understand Rav Yochanan is Damri Be'i Pater, Maitama Hasan Dehavala Lishluye, Vahachalo Havala Lishluye. Or maybe no, maybe he's not arguing with Reish Lakish, maybe he agrees. In the case of his wife who's a nida, he should have asked her. In the case of nosar, there was nobody to ask. Okay, so debatable whether Rav Yochanan agrees or disagrees with Reish Lakish. The Gemara left that as an open-ended point. And then the Gemara went on to discuss, well, let's understand Rav Yochanan in of itself. Meaning Rav Yochanan says, look, a man has relations with his wife who's a nida, he's chayv. He's chayv a karban chatas. Meaning that's considered shogeg. Right? He should have asked her. But when it comes to the yavama, man has relations with his yavama, so that's Toa B'dvar Mitzvah, he's not going to be chayv a karban chatas. And the question is very simple, what's the difference? The Gemara tried to distinguish a number of differences between the two cases. Maybe in the case of his wife, she's pregnant, or maybe it was more than what the mitzvah of Onah required. But ultimately, when all said and done, the Gemara said the major difference between the case of Nida versus the case of Yavama is that by Ishto Nida, is that in the case of Ishto Nida, he should have asked her. It's that simple. Meaning, it's his wife, they communicate, he should have asked her. And the fact that he didn't ask her, and the fact that he had relations with her while she was a nida, so then he's chayv a karban chatas. That's the shogeg. Masha enkin, when it comes to the yavama, there the expectation is that this is the first time they're together. It's a very uncomfortable moment, and therefore there's no expectation that he should ask her. He should ask her, but if he doesn't, that doesn't register as a shogeg because there's a natural level of discomfort between the two of them. They are not husband and wife. They were up until this point brother-in-law and sister-in-law. And so therefore it's, the Gemara says, buzzes mine. It's so uncomfortable that if he doesn't ask and she turned out to be an Ida, we're going to call that a Toa B'dvar Mitzvah. Good. Adkan, that took us through the statement of Rav Yochanan. And then what do we do after that? Then after that, we tried our best to find a Mishnah that supports Rav Yochanan. Now, what do you mean, a Mishnah supporting Rav Yochanan? All Rav Yochanan is saying is that there's this concept called Toa B'dvar Mitzvah. So what Mishnah, meaning one Mishnah, we already saw a number of Mishnayos that subscribe to the position of Toa B'dvar Mitzvah. So why was the Gemara struggling so hard yesterday trying to find a Mishnah supporting Rav Yochanan? The answer is because on all those Mishnayos that we saw, the Mishnah here in Pesachim, the Mishnah back in Shabbos, all those Mishnayos are describing a scenario where there's a time limit. Meaning the reason why the Torah gives you an excuse and says it's okay, I understand the mistake you made, is because you're on the clock. In the case of Karban Pesach, you're on the clock. You have to shech the Karban Pesach by tonight. In the case of the milah, you're on the clock because you have to give the milah by the end of the eighth day. So that pressure of having to do the mitzvah by a certain amount of time, basically the Torah says, now, I understand there was a lot of pressure, there was a time constraint, and so therefore you made a mistake, I give you a pass. That's fine. But in the case of Yibum, there's no, you're not on the clock. Meaning there's a mitzvah of Yibum to perform. Yes, the earlier you do it, the better. But if you don't do it today, you'll do it tomorrow. If you don't do it tomorrow, you'll do it the day after that. So there isn't that pressure. So maybe what we could argue is that if there's a time limit and you make a mistake, so the pressure got to you. And the Torah says, I understand. Torah b'dvar mitzvah. But if there's no time limit and you had plenty of time, so maybe there we wouldn't agree. And maybe over there we wouldn't say Torah b'dvar mitzvah. So how about the case of when you ate the nota. But that wasn't a Mishnah. Meaning that your point is excellent, but that wasn't a Mishnah. That was a statement by Reish Lakish. And it could be that Rav Yochanan either agrees or disagrees with Reish Lakish, which we don't really know. But even still, in other words, it's not a Mishnah. So what Mishnah supports Rav Yochanan. So finally the Gemara says, well, how about the Mishnah in Truma? Well, the Mishnah in Truma discusses the following scenario. All right, after years of thinking that he was a Kohen, Dad sits him down and Dad says to him, son, I've got really unfortunate news to tell you. Your mother's a Grusha. You're a Halal, meaning I'm a Kohen, but you're not. And now for all those years he ate Truma. So do we look back now at all the Truma that he ate, and do we call that a Shogeg? So what did the Mishnah in Truma tell us? It's a Machlokas. It's a Machlokas between Rav Yehoshua and Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer, who doesn't subscribe to the principle of Torah B'dvar Mitzvah, so he's going to look back at all the times that he ate Truma, and he's going to call that a Shogeg. Consequently, if that's a Shogeg, what does a Shogeg have to do when he eats Truma B'Shogeg? He has to pay Karen, he has to pay Chomesh to the Kohen. Fine. So Rabbi Eliezer says that's a Shogeg. And in that Mishnah, Rabbi Yehoshua says, no, that's not a Shogeg, but rather that's Torah B'dvar Mitzvah. That's the opinion of Rav Yehoshua. Now, eating Truma, you're not on the clock. There's no time limit. There's no time constraint. And so, therefore, we have a Mishnah that describes the principle of Torah B'dvar Mitzvah without there having a clock and having you under the pressure of being under with a deadline. Okay. So that's what we had. That was the last thing we saw yesterday in the daf. That takes us to the bottom of Ayin Beis Amud Beis. The Gemara now says maybe the Mishnah in Truma is also not going to be a good support for Rav Yochanan. We're starting from the very bottom of Ayin Beis Amud Beis, and the Gemara says, "My Taima de Rabbi Yehoshua." So the Gemara says, what's behind the position of Rav Yehoshua, the Rav Yehoshua that we just went over by in the Mishnah Truma? So the Gemara says, Dichsi Baruch Hashem Chelo Fal Yadav Tirtzeh. So the Gemara says, maybe it has nothing to do with the fact that you're told B'dvar Mitzvah. Maybe eating Truma is an avoda. We know that under certain circumstances, when a Kohen does an avoda, and he shouldn't be doing an avoda, it still is going to be mekubal, still going to be accepted. The pasuk says in Parshas Vezos Habracha, we're going to see this pasuk in just a few short weeks from now. Ve'erech Hashem Chelo, Kadosh Baruch Hu will bless Chelo, his action. But the word Chelo can also come from the same word as mechulal. Even though he's a halal, Ve'erech Hashem Chelo. Lichatchila, obviously, a Kohen who is a halal cannot do the avoda. But if he does it, Poel Yadav Tirtzeh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will accept the avoda that he did. So maybe the Achilas Truma is going to be, we're going to look back and realize, look, he shouldn't have been eating Truma all those years. But if we put Truma under the category of avoda, okay, he gets a pass. And he's not considered a Shogeg. To which the Gemara now says, okay, that could very well be. And the Gemara continues on this discussion, Hecha Ikrei Avoda, very bottom of Ayin Beis Amud Beis. Hecha Ikrei Avoda, Detanya, Maisa, Rabbi Tarfon Shalabai, Mishla Beis Medrash, one day Rabbi Tarfon Mishir. L'shachritz Matzah Rabbi Gamliel, and the next day he finds Rabbi Gamliel, Amr lo mimnei malobata, Mishla Beis Medrash. I wonder, how come last night you weren't in Beis, and yesterday you weren't in the Beis Medrash? Amr lo, Avoda Avadati. He says, I was doing Avoda. Now this is a discussion between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Tarfon, post-Churban, after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So one only needs to wonder, what kind of excuse are you giving me? You were doing the Avoda. I'm sure you realize we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. So Amalok called the Verechem Inam Ella Divrei Tema. I don't know what you're saying. V'chi avoda bezman hazeh minayin. What avoda are you talking about? Amalo, harei u'omer. We're now on the top of Ein Gimel Amud Aleph. Avodas matana, tenes kunaschem, ve'azara karev yumas. The pasuk says avodas matana. Rashi is talking about the gifts that are given to the Kohen. All that is considered avoda. Now we know that the Kohen gets portions of every carbon. We also know that the Kohen gets truma. Part of the matnas kahuna is truma. And the pasuk says that falls under the category of avoda. Avoda is matana, ten kunas chem, v'azar karev yumas. Asu achil is truma, b'gvulin ka'avod is beis hamikdash. Truma eaten out in the gvulin, meaning outside of Yerushalayim, that's like avoda is beis hamikdash, just like the avoda in the beis hamikdash. Consequently, eating truma is an avoda. If eating truma is an avoda, so that means that even though you're halal, and even though really you shouldn't, but if you did, tirtzeh, it's going to be accepted. So now, going back to the original attempt of the Gemara, the Gemara is trying to find a Mishnah that supports Rav Yochanan, that a man who has relations with his Yavama, while she's a Nida, he says that's Torah B'dvar Mitzvah. Truth be told, after all said and done, we quoted a number of Mishnahs throughout Shas. Truth be told, we don't really have one definitive Mishnah that supports the statement of Rav Yochanan. All the Mishnayos can be explained as having another consideration, either a time, either a deadline, like the Mishnah Pesachim, like the Mishnah the Mishnah in Shabbos, they have a deadline, but the Mishnah in Trumos, that's avoda. And that's why that's considered an exception as well. All said and done, the Rambam brings down the case of Rav Yochanan. The Rambam says that is considered a Torah B'dvar Mitzvah. Again, the case is a man who has relations with his Yavama, who's an Ida. But the Rambam also writes, as our Gemara concluded, that a man has relations with his wife, who's an Ida, that's a shogeg. That he has to answer for, because he should have asked her. And he didn't. Okay. We're now on the very top of Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph, and we are continuing in the Mishnah. The Mishnah that we learned all the way back on Ayin Aleph Amud Beis. So the Mishnah over there describes how I shecht a carbon Pesach on Shabbos, but I shouldn't have. Now, under most circumstances, that's a problem. That's going to be a significant problem, meaning that's a shogeg. Now, again, according to Rabbi Yoshua, if it looked like a carbon Pesach, so fine. So that's even though it wasn't. So that's what's called Torah B'dvar Mitzvah. But what if I shecht it, let's say, in the Mishnah, gives a scenario where there were no consumers to it. In other words, I know that nobody was there to eat it. So the Mishnah says, that's going to be a very serious problem. The Mishnah says that you're chayiv. Right? If you look back on the Mishnah, all the way back in Ayin Aleph Amud Beis, at the bottom of the Amud, shecht shalola ochla v'shalola mnuya v'la'areil l'tmeim chayiv. So if you shecht such a carbon Pesach, on Erev Pesach, and again, the 14th day of Nisan falls on a Shabbos, so you're going to be chayiv. So the Gemara just has a very simple question, which is, pshita, it's obvious. Meaning, I'm shechting a carbon Pesach that I have no business shechting. Okay, good. So you're going to be chayiv, meaning you just violated Shabbos. So, kevin da'asam pasol hacha chayiv. And we know it, meaning once we know that the carbon is going to be disqualified, so therefore I have no license to do it, and therefore on Shabbos, if I don't have license to do it, it's Chil Shabbos. So the Gemara says, Mishum de Tana Seifa Potter, Tana Resha Chayav. So the Gemara's answer is symmetry. We want the symmetry in the Mishnah. So the Gemara says, Va'anami Pshita, Mishum de Hasam Kasher, Hacha Potter. So the Gemara says, yeah, but I don't even need the symmetry. Because the first point in the Mishnah was that if I shecht it for people who can eat it, so then that's good, you're going to be Potter. The Gemara says, but I know that already. Meaning, once the animal is a Kasher Karben Pesach, so therefore I'm not going to be in violation of Shabbos. Ela I did de Tana Shechta Shalol Shma. So the Gemara says, well, it really goes back all the way to the beginning of the Mishnah. Meaning the Mishnah was discussing the scenario of Shalol Lishmo. So once we were on the topic of Shalol Lishmo, you know how these Mishnayos work. So then we move on to the topic of Shalol Ochlav. It's kind of like there's a sing-song to the Mishnah, and we move from Shalol Lishmo to Shalol Ochlav. We always make that movement. The Gemara now wonders, okay, but why do I need the case of Shalol Lishmo? Because it gets us to the Machlokas of Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yoshua. Meaning, the first case in the Mishnah was a Pesach Sheshachtu Shalol Lishmo. I shechted a carbon Pesach, but not for Lishem carbon Pesach, where there, everyone's in agreement that's going to be Chil Shabbos. You violate the Shabbos. But then what does the Mishnah do? The Mishnah gives us the flip case, What if I shecht another carbon l'shem carbon Pesach? Oh, that's exciting, because that takes us now to the machlokas of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. So basically, the driving force of the Mishnah is to get to that machlokas Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, which then require the Mishnah to go over the case of Pesach Sheshechtu Shelo Lishmo, which then move the Mishnah to discuss cases which are similar. Shelo La'ochlav, etc., etc. Shelo Limnuyav. So in other words, but really the driving force of the Mishnah is to get to the machlokas of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. Okay, period. Amle Ravuna Barchina Lebreki Azalsakama Derebi Zrika. By me, nay. I want you to ask the following question. Meaning, I have a general question regarding this Mishnah. I really don't understand. So, Ledivre Omer Mekalka Bechabura Potter. Now, you make a chabura. You make a wound. And you're not accomplishing anything by doing so. Now, there's a major machlokas in the Gemara in Shabbos. Right? Rashi tells you where to look in Shabbos to see this machlokas. But what if I make a chabur, if I make a wound, but there is nothing positive that comes out of it? There's nothing beneficial from coming out of it. Are you chayev? In other words, did you violate Shabbos, yes or no? Now, in general, we know that most of the malachas of Shabbos are creative activities, meaning planting, meaning plowing, meaning cooking. What I'm basically doing is I'm yielding a positive result. There are a couple of malachas, by definition, are not constructive actions, but rather they're destructive actions. Making a fire, usually by default, is a destructive act. Now, granted, I can make a fire for constructive purposes, but generally the action is destructive. Chabura, making a wound, which we could put under the category of shechita. We could put it under a number of categories. But making a wound usually is a destructive act. So if I make a wound on an animal, is that considered Chilul Shabbos, or is that not considered Chilul Shabbos? On one hand, you'll say it's a destructive act. You're only chayav on Shabbos if I do something constructive. On the other hand, what you could say is, because in general, Chabura is a destructive act, this is an exception to the rule. Even though I'm being mekalkel bechabura, I'm going to be chayev. So that's a major machlokas in the Gemara and Shabbos. Right now, the Gemara says, let's assume the following. Let's assume mekalkel bechabur's potter, that if I do something destructive, I'm going to be exempt. Okay, let's take that. We're going to take just that viewpoint, which again is debatable, but we're going to take that viewpoint. So now I'm wondering, our Mishnah says that you shecht a Karm Pesach on Shabbos, and it didn't work. Our Mishnah says, if you had no business shechting that Karm Pesach, so then you're going to be chayev. You just violated Shabbos. And so now this is a Shabbos discussion. Strictly a Shabbos discussion. Why are you going to be chayev? All you did was you took an animal and you killed it. That's all you did. And so now you're going to be chayev for Shabbos for killing an animal? I didn't do anything constructive. So again, if it was a good shechita, that's constructive. I understand that. But it's not a good shechita. What we're going to end up doing is disposing this animal. So what good came out of it? And why are you going to be chayav a carbon chatas? Well, in other words, why is that chilul Shabbos? Okay. That's the question. So, So the Gemara says, what takana did you make? What positive benefit came out of this? So the Gemara's answer is tikinim alalo yardu. Okay, I'll give you one positive benefit, and that is the following: if I shechted this animal, it turns out there were no eaters of the animal, no consumers. So I went to the kohen. Here's what I did. Okay, I shouldn't have. I know. What do I do? So he'll tell you dispose of the animal. However, if it was put up on the mizbeach, now it shouldn't go on the mizbeach. But if it was put on the mizbeach, let it stay on the top of the Mizbeach. Im alu lo yardu. Do you remember? I mean, this takes us back a long time ago when we learned the end of Masech Tzvachim, the 8th or the 9th Perek, right? One of those two Perekim, where the Gemara over there has a discussion of various Karbanos, which really you should not bring up on the Mizbeach because they're disqualified, but if you did, you keep it there. Im alu lo yardu. So our Karban Pesach, I shechted it, there were no consumers. Truth be told, I didn't do good. Truth be told, I should really destroy it, dispose of it. But, im alu, lo yardu. So there is a positive benefit. It's not an exciting positive benefit, but there is some positive benefit to it. Good. Let's take this one step further. Let's say a shechtel carbon pesach and it had a blemish. Now you remember what we learned back in the Mishnah 9 Alpha Medveis, that if the animal has a blemish and you had every responsibility to check the animal before you shechted it, so therefore you're on the hook for shechting a carbon that had a blemish, so that's chilul Shabbos. So once again, the question begs, what positive result did you yield? So, tikein b'dukin sheba'ayin v'aliba d'Rabbi Akiva. Now, by the way, when it comes to a blemish, so im alu yardu, meaning if you put that up on the mizbeach, so then you have to take it down. Meaning the mizbeach, even b'di'evid, the mizbeach will not tolerate a blemished animal. So, what positive benefit did you yield? So, the Gemara's answer is tikein b'dukin sheba'ayin v'aliba d'Rabbi Akiva. There is a type of blemish which is acceptable. Meaning, again, lechatchila, obviously no, but if it has dukin sheba'ayin, so some translate that as some form of cataract. However it's to be translated, it is a minor blemish, and according to Rabbi Akiva, not even everyone agrees to this point, but according to Rabbi Akiva, because the blemish is so mild, so therefore if it goes on the mizbech, it doesn't come down from the mizbech. So we could argue that even with a blemish, there's still some positive yield that is gained by shechting the animal. So the Gemara says, okay, let's go to the next line of the Mishnah. In the next line of the Mishnah, what do we learn? That if I shechted a carbon and it had a trefa, a trefa that was concealed, meaning one of the organs was punctured or severed, there's no way I was going to know that before I shechted the animal. So the Mishnah says, obviously you're not going to be chayv a carbon chatos, meaning that's not violating Shabbos. How are you supposed to know? Fine. But it's clear from the Mishnah that had it been a trefa shebegaloi, had it been a revealed trefa, meaning we could see just looking at the animal, the animal's a trefa, right? It had a sword stuck right into its side. Okay, I mean, just, it's obvious. It's obvious that it is a trefa. So it's clear from the Mishnah that you're going to be chayv. So matikain. So the Gemara says, now I wonder, what benefit did you do by shechting the animal? Tikain laosi midei nevela. So the Gemara says, yeah, no, there's a benefit, because now that I've given it a proper shechita, granted, it's not going to go up on the mizbeach. Granted, of course, that nobody's allowed to eat it, but at least it's not going to be, nevela. It's not going to be considered a dead carcass. Meaning, right, we've gone over this point already a number of times back in Chulin. An animal's a trefa. That just simply means I can't eat it. Okay. But if an animal dies without the benefit of a shechita, the animal is not only are you not allowed to eat the animal, but the animal now becomes an avatum, it becomes a source of tumma. That animal is what's called a nevela. So if I take a trefa animal, in other words, one of its organs is punctured, severed, it's going to die within the next 12 months. And I shech such an animal, that shechita is good. Now, to be clear, that doesn't mean you can eat the animal. Animal's a trefa. Animal continues to be a trefa. What the shechita accomplishes is that it prevents the animal from becoming an avatama. The animal now is a trefa shechuta. It's a shechta trefa, which means that you're allowed to touch the animal and you won't become tame. Good. So, To the question of what positive benefit is there in shechting an animal which is a trefa, the answer is it doesn't become a nevela. Just give me one moment. We'll just finish the thread. Maska Floravina Hadatanya, the Gemara says, okay, let's do the following. Let's learn a brisa together. Let's say I do one act. I shecht an animal. Now it happens to be a carbon chatas, I'm shechting on Shabbos, I'm shechting it outside the Beis HaMikdash, and I'm shechting it for the purposes of Avodah Zarah. So in terms of Averas, I hit the trifecta. Like we've done just about everything we could do in this one act of Shechita. In this one act of Shechita, I shechted it on Shabbos, I shechted it outside the Beis HaMikdash, I shechted it for Avodah Zarah, so chayv alav gimel chatas. So now, congratulations, in that one act of Shechita, you've netted three carbon chatases, meaning there are three karis penalties that you violated. Chilul Shabbos, Avodah Zarah, and Shechut Eichutz. Okay, wonderful. So, now that's wonderful. I mean, you know what I mean by wonderful. Now, that's wonderful, but, again, let's ask now. from the Shabbos perspective, from the Chilul Shabbos perspective. What benefit did you do? Again, assuming, taking the position of Mekalka B'chaburus Pater, so what did you do over here? Now remember, you shechted it for Avodah Zarah, which means that you can get no benefit from the animal. There literally is nothing you could do with this animal. So, and as far as preventing the tumah, as Rashi points out, you didn't prevent tumah, because we know that anything that's offered to Avodah Zarah gives off tumah. So in other words, literally you did nothing beneficial by shechting the animal. So why were you mechal Shabbos? In other words, Rashi points, yes, you removed it from Nevela, but it's still an avatumah because it's takrovitz avodah zarah. So it's, in other words, it's still tame. You haven't stopped the tumah. Okay, so that's the Gemara's question. Matikin, I'm Rav Idi Shemotzi Midei Ever Menachai. So to which the Gemara says, well, I'll tell you what benefit there was. You took it out of Ever Menachai. And as Rashi points out, take a look at Rashi over here. Rashi says, Ever Menachai, Livnei Noach Shim Achlu Eino Neharak. So Rashi says, because look, while the animal was alive, Bnei Noach, I mean, we're not allowed to eat the animal, that's a given. That's called Ever Menachai. Bnei Noach are not allowed to eat the animal, that's called Ever Menachai. Meaning, the of their seven prohibitions, or I should say rather, the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach, six are prohibitions, one's a positive. Hold on, let me just finish. So he says, of the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach, so one of them is, they're not allowed to eat Ever Menachai. So granted, when I kill the animal, it's a chatas that I killed on Shabbos. So I've done nothing productive, nothing positive. In fact, I was over to Avodah Zarah, and I did Shechutei Chutz, and I shechted on Shabbos, and I had no right to do so. So, but to the question of what positive benefit is yielded, meaning if you take the position of Mekalka B'chabur Apater, in order to be Chayiv on Shabbos, in order to be considered a Mechal Shabbos, you must have done something positive, and to which the Gemara here answers, yeah, there is something positive, because prior to my Shechita, the Goy can't eat it. Now after I shecht it, the guy can't eat it. It's interesting because the way Rashi sets it up, it's clear that a guy can eat takrovus avodah zarah. Meaning,
all right. You're
Not going to. I mean, you're not going to sell it to the guy. You're not going to.
You're still getting goodwill.
Okay. No. In other words, you're right. If you sell it to the guy, if you gift it to the guy, so there's what to say that you benefited. So, but the Gemara is just operating on a very basic point, meaning that there's something good that came out of it. If the guy comes over and he eats it, he won't be killed. In fact, if you look at Rashi, Rashi's very clear. Rashi says that if he eats it, he won't be killed. Meaning, you're not giving it to him. It's just, the point is that for something that the guy would have eaten, he would have been killed over, Ever Menachai, now he won't be. It is a consequence that comes out of the Shechita.
This answer
would have worked earlier as well. Yeah, correct. Yes.
Why in the case of an animal without the moon, and you don't kill the animal without shechita and bury it, so there would be no benefit to anybody.
Okay, but the Gemara. Yeah, the Gemara says, yeah, in other words, in order to be chayav, there has to be something constructive, something.
So this is not chayav?
So in other words, so here the Gemara is arguing is that there's something constructive that came out of the Shechita. Even though, you ask, you go to your local Orthodox rabbi and you say to him, here's what I did. Right, I shechted for Avodah Zarah, and I did all this.
I'm not talking about this case, I'm thinking a case separate from this. You just killed the animal and buried it. Is that constructive?
No, it is constructive, because before you shechted it, it was a nevela, it was Ever Menachai, and now that you shechted it, so now it's no longer nevela. Okay, good. That's a separate issue. But the actual shechita itself created a new chalos. Right, it benefited you. Okay, good. All right, that's that. And now from here until the end of the perek, we have Akira talk. Okay, now Akira, by the way, not in the classic sense of Akira, not like we talked about in Shabbos, where in order to be Chayv Anotza, I got to pick something up, and Akira and Hanacha, no, not that kind of discussion, but rather the following. Okay, we have kind of danced around this issue a number of times throughout the Masechta, but now here the Gemara is going to discuss this issue head on, and that is that in order to take a Karban Pesach, and to reassign it, does it require an akira or does it not require an akira? Meaning the fact of it is, do I have to actually verbalize and articulate that it is now going to be moved to another type of carbon, or does it happen automatically? This is the question of akira.
What does the word akira mean?
Akira literally means to uproot. So basically, I'm uprooting the status. So do I have to uproot the status? So the Gemara attacks this question from left field, but then what we're going to do is we're going to move from left field, then we're going to move it to, I guess, the center of the infield, if you want to continue with that really bad analogy. So, let's say I have a carbon asham that I don't need anymore. Now, I know usually we discuss these types of cases in the context of chatas. Meaning, for example, I have a carbon chatas. The owner died. Okay? Owner needed to bring a carbon chatas. He set aside a carbon as a carbon chatas, and he dies. So now, what happens to the carbon chatas? What happens to it is we put it to death, meaning we dispose of it.
You let it die, right?
You let it die, right? You promote its death. And the reason why is very simple, because the owner no longer needs it. Well, the owner needed a kapara, his death served as a kapara. So he no longer needs it. So therefore, this is one of the five instances in the Torah where the chatas is just simply put to death. Okay, that's by carbon chatas. Now let's talk about an asham. Now, an asham is like a carbon chatas, but it's not a carbon chatas. Now, the rules are, by carbon asham, is that if any one of the circumstances which would warrant the disposal of a carbon chatas, when it comes to a carbon asham, you can let it graze. Let it graze, develop a blemish. Once it's blemished, now I can redeem the animal and take the money, and the money is going to be earmarked to a carbonola. Fine? That's our basic rules of Chatas versus Asham. Now, there happens to be one Tana, his name is Rabbi Eliezer, I know we've seen a lot of him recently, who says that an Asham is just like a Chatas. Whatever is true by Chatas is true like an Asham. But with one exception later this morning, let's not go like Rabbi Eliezer, let's go like the normative approach. This is what happens to a carbon Asham. Okay, now, I'm Rav Hunam, Rav Asham Shenitak L'Ri'iyah, I have a carbon asham, which is Nitak L'Ri'iyah. Nitak is basically saying it was uprooted, to be left to graze. Vishachto Stam, and I shech such a carbon kasha la'ola, it will be kasha for a carbon ola. So, so what do you see over here? That if I have an asham and it's no longer needed, again, whatever happened, meaning the owner died, the owner got a kapara through another carbon, whatever the exact circumstance was, the carbon asham was no longer needed as a carbon asham, and now we're letting it graze, and I shecht it, it will be a carbon ola. Now, I said just a moment ago that nitak means I uprooted it. Let me modify that statement. You didn't uproot it, you just simply realized that you no longer needed it. But you weren't okay. You didn't actually reassign it. So, all you did was just shecht it, so it automatically defaults into a carbonola. This statement of Rav, which was given to us by Rav Huna, is working with the assumption that I don't need an akira. Meaning once an animal could be reassigned, it automatically gets reassigned without me having to do an actual akira. It's really that simple. It's a verbal declaration saying it's no longer carbon asham, I no longer need it as a carbon asham for whatever reason. I mean, it has to be a legitimate reason. I am now moving it towards a carbonola. It has to be a verbal declaration. Here, however, he didn't make such a declaration. Nitak L'Ri'iyah just simply means he no longer needs it as a carbon asham anymore. Now, there are basically two things you could do. Number one, what you could do is you could just simply let it graze, develop a blemish, and redeem it. The benefit of that would be it's no longer a carbon. Granted, when I redeem it, the money, the proceeds, has to go to the base of Mikdash as a carbonola, but at least this particular animal can be eaten. Or option number two, I could bring this animal as an ola. Either way. So, Rav says, if you shecht it, I shecht it stam, meaning without doing a verbal declaration, it automatically defaults into a carbonola. Okay? So, I get from this that according to Rav, it doesn't require an akira. Now, ihachi kilo nitak nami. So the Gemara says, okay, so then why does it need to be left to graze? Meaning, from the moment that the owner no longer needs it, at that point already, it should be reassigned. Why do I have this like middle step of nitak l'ri'iyah, where it's left to graze? So gzir lach kapara to lifnei kapara. The Gemara says that you're right. Me ikar hadin, according to strict letter of the law, you don't need it. You don't need this nitak l'ri'iya. But the nitak l'ri'iya is just there because we're concerned that what's going to happen is that once we get into this habit, I mean, I don't know how habit forming this is going to be, but once we get into the habit of just assuming that it automatically defaults into an ola, we may make the mistake of us making this assumption even before kapara. In other words, while he still needs a karban asham, for whatever reason I shechted it and I said, oh, you know what, it's an ola, and it's not, so therefore it's a gzera, as a rabbinic decree. Omen atema did not, and the Gemara says, and let me point out another Mishnah and Temura that makes the case that there is such a gezerah. Did not we learn the Mishnah Hashem Shemesa Ba'alav Hashem's Kapar Ba'alav? If I have a carbon Hashem, where either the owner died or the owner received a kapar using another animal, Yirachi Stai, you let it graze until it develops a blemish. V'yimaka v'yiplu dam of the Nadava. Then with the proceeds of that sale, that redemption are going to go into the Nadava. That means a pushkin in the base of Mikdash where that money is going to be used to buy carbonola. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Yamos. Rabbi Eliezer says, no, the animals are to be left to die. This is Rabbi Eliezer who says that the Hashem is just like a chatas. And because the chatas, we would let the animal die. We have to leave the animal die. Here too, Rabbi Eliezer says the same thing by an Hashem. Rabbi Yoshua Omer, Yimakir V'yavi B'damav Ola. And Rabbi Yeshua says, no, you sell it, and you let the proceeds of the sale go to a carbon Ola. B'damavina V'al Gufalo. So the Gemara says, now, you redeem it. Question, why do you have to redeem it? Why not just simply bring the carbon as an ola? Why go through that sidestep of redeeming it and the money is going to be... Just bring the animal itself as a carbon ola. The Gemara says, "Degazal acher kapara tulefnei kapara shmamina." The Gemara says, you're right. And me'ikar adin, according to the strict letter of the law, the animal itself could be brought as an ola. The reason why we go through this additional step of letting it graze, develop a blemish, sell it, and the proceeds go to carbon ola is because we're afraid that once we allow this animal itself to become shechted as a carbon ola, we're going to be, then we may end up shechting it prior to the kapara under the guise that it is a carbon ola. So once again, you see that there's a rabbinic decree. Okay, so now, Rav Huna, who becomes now the spokesman of Rav, says that when you have a karban and it goes through a conversion from one type to another, it don't require an akira. It happens as a default. So the Gemara says, consider the following. I shecht the karban. I learn that all the owners of the karban Pesach, what did they do? They withdrew. They unregistered themselves and they joined another group. And so now it turns out that we have a Karban Pesach that is ownerless, that is registered by nobody. What do we see back in the Mishnah? Obviously the Karban Pesach is no good, but as far as you, the person who shechted it, you're fine. You're fine. Right? What did the Mishnah say? Shechted the Nimsa Trefa, no, not that case, sorry. Last case of the Mishnah. No, de Shemashcha Abal Mithyadam O Shemesu Shininmu Pater. You're fine. Maybe you should shecha berishas. Because when you shechted it, you didn't know this information, and you weren't supposed to know this information. So you're fine. That's not considered a shogeg. Good. That's our Mishnah. And now, what does Rav Chista want to do with this Mishnah? We turn the Amud. We're now on the top of Ein Gimel and Beis. V'tzni Allah, what did we learn on this Mishnah? Bechol ki agav nisarf miyad. Let's say this wasn't Shabbos. Let's say this happened on a weekday. The result would be, I got to dispose of the carbon immediately. Okay. Now, just a word on disposal of a carbon. If a carbon becomes disqualified, so it needs to obviously get rid of. In other words, we have to dispose of it. There basically are there's one major consideration in terms of how I'm going to dispose of it. If it's a psul shebeguf, if it's an intrinsic disqualification in the animal, so then you get rid of it right away. In other words, it's a carbon, a nifsal, it's a disqualified carbon, and so therefore, you get rid of it right away.
Burn it?
You burn it. Well, sometimes you burn it, sometimes you bury it. It's the end of Temura that has the discussion of what's a proper method of disposal. But burning is usually the method. Okay. If the disqualification, however, is not an intrinsic disqualification, it's an external issue, like our case right here, meaning where everything's fine with the carbon. It just happens to be the owner. There's an owner issue. In this case, the owner issue is we don't have any owners. But in other words, it's an external disqualification, but the carbon itself is good. So now what do? I can't just dispose of it right away because there's nothing wrong with the carbon per se, meaning it's disqualified, but it's not an intrinsic psul. So what do I have to do there? Let the carbon decay overnight. Then tomorrow morning, now it becomes intrinsically disqualified, and then we'll dispose of the carbon. You want lina.
Right.
You want lina so that it becomes now intrinsically disqualified, so then you dispose of it. So in terms of disposal of a carbon that went bad, so your basic your thought process is going to be, if the disqualification is internal, if it's a mum shebegufo, if it's a psul shebegufo, then you get to burn it right away. If it's an extrinsic issue, so then to ubar tsuraso, then you have to let it just decay overnight, let it lie there overnight. Tomorrow morning, now it has adopted an intrinsic psul, and then you get to dispose of it. Good, that's your guidelines in terms of disposal of a carbon. So now let's think of what the Braisa just taught us. That if I have a carbon Pesach where I shecht it, and it's not Shabbos, it's during the week, what do I do? Yisareth miyad. The Braisa says burn it right away. So now, I don't understand. What do you mean burn it right away? Where's the intrinsic disqualification? So the Gemara says, "Iyamar bishlama bayakira." So this is why Rav Chisda now says, "I think I have an excellent question against Rav, because if Rav is wrong, let's assume he's wrong, and that every time an animal is going to get converted to another type, it requires an akira. So then I understand. So bishlama bayakira hay pesachu vekem dalesle balam havale pesula begufo amatula hachi yisarif miyad. So here I have now a carbon pesach without any owners, and it is a carbon pesach, and we have not, it does not convert on its own. It needs an akira, and here it didn't have it. So here I understand. I basically have now an ownerless carbon pesach. That's a psul shebegufo. That's an intrinsic disqualification. Eliyam arlo bayakira. So now, but let's say, Rav, you're right. If you're right, then I don't understand. Because you say that once I have a carbon pesach that no longer serves as a carbon pesach, it automatically converts into another carbon. So what do I have over here? I have now a shlamim. So now, why? The Braisa says burn it immediately. No, you don't. Meaning, I needed to adopt first an intrinsic disqualification, and then and only then we can burn it. Havale shlamim, psula mishumai, mishum davar acher, dekashachale acher tamishal ben arbaim. And by the way, if it's a shlamim, so what did I do wrong? Meaning, why even destroy it all? So that the Gemara says, I'll tell you why you have to destroy it, because it's a shlamim that you shechted after the tamishal ben arbaim. And we know that you're not allowed to do that. And we know that the only exception to that is the carbon Pesach, and right, a couple of other exceptions that we discussed at the beginning of the fifth parak of Pesachim. But in other words, that's what you did wrong. That's not an intrinsic disqualification. That's absolutely extrinsic. And therefore, it needs Ibert Surah by, it requires Ibert Surah, which is that term in the Gemara used to describe. I have to let it overnight. Leave it overnight. Good. So, Rav, if you're right, this Braisa makes no sense. Okay? Ditanya Zaklal. And in fact, the Gemara says, let's just learn together the basic rule. Kol shepsul begufo yisarf miyad. Bedama v'balam tu bar tsuraso. If the psul is in the carbon itself, so then you get to destroy right away. However, if the psul has something to do extrinsic to the animal, let's say after collecting the blood, it was not sprinkled on the mizbech. Or let's say after collecting the blood becomes tame, meaning it's something extrinsic to the animal. Or let's say something happened with the owners. The owners become tame, the owners die. Whatever the case is. In other words, something extrinsic to the animal, now you need Ibert Surah. So, V'yatzal Beisat Srefa, Ela lo tema shachtu stam kasher, L'shem Ola, Ela ema shachtu l'shem Ola kasher. So the Gemara says, the Gemara says, that is a very strong question against Rav. What we're going to have to suggest is that if I shechted stam, Don't say that if I shecht it's tam, it's kasher l'shem ola, but rather say, if I shecht it l'shem ola, it would be kasher. Ama bayich akira. So from there, the conclusion is that it, in fact, requires an akira. Okay. Ula Rebbe Chiya Bar Gamda Damar Nizra Kamin Bicha Bor Vamri Kigon Shayu Balam Tamei Meisim Nidach La Pesach Sheni. The Gemara says, okay, let's consider a mission that we learned a couple of days ago. Right? We learned a couple of days ago, more than a couple of days ago. Okay? About a week and a half ago. We learned that you had a carbon Pesach, and what happened was is that we had to convert it to a Shlamim. Again, the day of the 14th came and went. For whatever reason, it wasn't needed, and the Mishnah said that you have to convert it to a shlamim. That indicates that it required an akira. And you remember, what did everyone say? In other words, there was a Beis Medrash, and everyone in the Beis Medrash says, oh, that Mishnah is talking about where it was needed for Pesach Sheni. And that's why even after Pesach came and went, we still thought that this was going to be used for a carbon Pesach. But had that not been the case, and had we not needed it for Pesach Sheni, it automatically would have defaulted to a Shlamim. So, that Mishnah, and the way that everyone in the Beis Medrash was learning that Mishnah, gives us a strong indication that it don't need an Akira. So, hi hu da bai Akira, haba ama lo bai Akira, ma'ikal ameimar. So now what are you going to say? Elam ravuna b'reder of Yeshua, hacha b'maizken, kagon she'ifrisha konim chatzos, umesu balam achar chatzos, da'avali nira v'nidcha. So the Gemara says, okay, maybe perhaps we're talking about a scenario where we separate the carbon Pesach before chatzos, the owners of the animal died after chatzos, so in other words, at one point in time, it was standing to be shechted as a carbon Pesach. This is what's called nira v'nidcha. It gets disqualified, but after it becomes qualified. So it can no longer be fit. Midu time al Rav. The Gemara says, okay, but please let's remember, we're trying to explain Rav. Ha amar Rav balechayim ein nidachim. Rav is of the opinion that live animals never become disqualified. Meaning that live animals, even when they become fit and disqualified, can become requalified. So El Amra Papa Hamani Rabbi Eliezer he. So the Gemara says, okay, maybe we could do is we could say the price is going like Rabbi Eliezer. You know why it is that becomes disqualified? Because we're going like Rabbi Eliezer. And Rabbi Eliezer says that if I shecht another carbon for the sake of the carbon Pesach, it becomes pasul. Okay, not that long ago, again, about a week and a half ago, we went over the shita of Rabbi Eliezer. The Gemara says, wait 1 second, Rabbi Eliezer, yichatas nami mechayev dehalais l'Rabbi Eliezer, tobit var mitzvah pater. The Gemara says, slow down. Because remember, if you want to assign the Mishnah like Rabbi Eliezer, it also happens to be that Rabbi Eliezer does not hold of the concept of tobit var mitzvah. So that's not going to work. Elatirgam of Rav Yosef, Berei Derev Salah, Chasida, Kamed Derev Papa, Hamani, Yosef ben Chunahi. Finally, what we'll suggest is that the author of this Brisa is Yosef ben Chunahi. Again, the Brisa says that if this were to happen during the week, we would destroy it immediately. Question, why do I have to destroy it immediately? What intrinsic disqualification is there in such a carbon Pesach? So the Gemara says, that Brisa is authored by Yosef ben Chunai. Now we learned in the Mishnah, Yosef ben Chunai Omer, Anishchat l'shem Pesach, l'shem Chatos, Psulim. That if I take a carbon, I shecht l'shem Pesach, it's disqualified. Meaning it's not Rabbi Eliezer, but it's a Tana who holds to the same position, Rabbi Eliezer. Am a Psul begufo, Mishum Hachi, Sarf Miad. And that's why the Brisa says you have to destroy it right away. Uve Peture, Savalek Rav Yoshua. Now, why is this better? It's better because it's not Rabbi Eliezer. So what we can argue is, on the issue of shechting another carbon, l'shem carbon Pesach, that's a disqualification. And that's a psul shebegufo. On the issue of Torah b'dvar mitzvah, he subscribes to the position of Rabbi Yoshua. Beautiful. And that basically now is the finality of the answer. I know there's more Gemara. I'll just quickly run through the rest of the Gemara. But basically that's it. Meaning I have a brisa that says that if I shecht a carbon Pesach on the afternoon of the 14th, and it's not Shabbos, so what do? Dispose of it immediately. Question. Why dispose of it immediately? It's not an intrinsic disqualification. Answer. It is an intrinsic disqualification. Because the author of that brisa is Rabbi Choni ben Yosef, who's of the opinion, Yosef ben Chunai, who's of the opinion that if I shecht another carbon, the shame carbon Pesach on the afternoon of the 14th, that's an intrinsic disqualification. Period. Good. Now, Rav Ashi will attempt to give one other answer. It's going to be a difficult answer. The Gemara is not going to accept it, but he's going to attempt. So, Amar Rav Ashi, Amar Rav Damar, Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, Detanya, Rav Shmuel ben Osher, Rav Yochanan ben Broka, Omer, Im Yeshos Beyom, Leida, Im Mashko, Balim, Es Yedem, O Shemeso, Shenitmu, Chayav. So, Vitu Bart, Sarasov, Yotzele, Besa, Strefa. So, the Gemara says, if there was time left in the day to discover whether or not there are or are not owners, so therefore, you have the responsibility of discovering. And so therefore, if I shecht it on Shabbos, it's going to be chayav, and to bar tzuraso, and you have to let it leave it overnight, and then take it out to be burnt. My time, Allah Mishum Dlo by Akira. So the Gemara says, presumably it's because he does not have this Akira requirement. And that's why you have to leave it overnight. So me my Dilma Mishum de Savala Kitan de Bay Rabbi de Rabba Baravua de Amar Afilopigal Nami by Ibertsura. It could very well be that that's not the reason why he requires the Ibrit Surah. The reason why he requires the Ibrit Surah is because he subscribes to the viewpoint of a particular Braisa. That even Pigel needs Ibrit Surah. Now, Pigel for sure is an intrinsic disqualification. Di Aleph Avon Avon Minosar, based on Xer Shava, Di Lo Temahach Nitmu Balim Maikal Amemar, because look, one of the things that are mentioned is the owners become Tameh. Havada by Akira. Now, if the owners become Tameh, so that for sure needs to be reassigned. So Dam Rabbi Chia bar Gamda Nizrika Mipi Chabur Kegon Shayu Balim Tameh Meis, because remember, if the owners become Tameh Meis, that means then that we're just going to put the Karban Pesach on hold to Pesach Sheni. In order for it to be converted to a Shlamim, I have to be Oker. So the Gemara says this is going to be a difficult approach. It's really not a defendable approach. We're going to go back to the previous approach. That the author of the Braisa that says that you get to destroy right away and you don't have to wait, that's because the author of the Braisa is Rav Yosef ben Chunai, who says that if I shecht the Karban Pesach, if I shecht another Karban, L'shem Karban Pesach, on the afternoon of the 14th, that's considered a psul shebegufo, and that's why you get to burn it and destroy it right away. Okay, Ad Kan. So again, what we accomplished this morning, we finished the discussion of Torah B'dvar Mitzvah. We asked the question, why if I shecht this animal on a Shabbos, am I chayav, why am I a mechal Shabbos? Aren't I mechalko b'chabura? The Gemara gave a number of answers to explain why this is not an absolute kilkel, why there is something constructive. And finally, a major machlokus amongst the Amorayim, whether or not when I no longer need the Karban Pesach, does it automatically get reassigned as a Shlamim, or do I have to do an Akira? That turns into a major machlokus amongst the Amorayim. We had various Mishnayos and Braisos that seem to support one side or another, and the Gemara ends up, after all said and done, defending Rav's position that it does not require an Akira. Even though, by the way, the consensus seems to be that it does require an Akira, but at least we defended Rav's position. Okay, Ad Kan. Tomorrow we begin the seventh parak of Pesachim.